Holmes, I'd like to welcome Barbara Marx Hubbard, who has now revised Conscious Evolution. And what a unique biography you have. You ran for vice president. You were a Connecticut housewife. You started making contact with all these thought leaders like Buckminster Fuller. Can you walk us through a little bit of your biography so our audience gets a sense of who you are and what you've done before we get into the book?
Well, thank you, Alan. Just very briefly, it was a series of very deep life questions that moved me. First question, when we dropped the atomic bombs on Japan, I was 15 years old, and I asked a question, what is the meaning of all our new power that's good? And I found nobody knew. That is to say, science, technology, industry, radical technologies. Nobody really knew. And I won't go into the history, but I tried the church, I tried Bryn Mawr College, I tried the President of the United States. Nobody knew. It's the second thing I think that was a big discovery for me was Teilhard de Chardin, in which I discovered the process of evolution as leading to ever more complex systems of ever higher order and ever higher consciousness. And what that did was affirm in me a sense of purpose, meaning, and direction for evolution itself, and what's more, for my own life. And I found a vocation within that impulse of evolution toward communicating more about the evolutionary potential at a time when there was no worldview. In the early 60s, the meta-narratives had faded. We had failed with the two world wars, now environment. We had a lot of small movements, but no worldview. So I would say that through a whole set of many, many activities, it became my life purpose to offer to humanity a comprehensive worldview and how every one of us can participate in it at a time of planetary crisis, which demands a shift. That's how I found it.
How did you then take what you were thinking and network yourself with people like Buckminster Fuller and Jonas Salk and Abraham Maslow?
Well, the first thing I did after reading Toward a Psychology of Being by Abraham Maslow, he advised us to be bold. So I was bold and I called him up.
You just called him on the phone?
Yes.
Okay.
Oops, whoops. Oh, here's another phone call.
He might be calling you now from, you know, some great beyond.
I do not believe this.
It's okay.
I'm on another call.
You're very popular.
Alan, I know. It's all your fault. I know. I'll call you later after I finish with Alan Combs. That's all right, but I'll tell you about AARP on the phone after Alan. Okay? All right. Bye.
That's okay. We can edit this because we're not live, so we'll take care of that. Don't worry about it.
All right. Sorry.
Okay. So we're talking about how you network yourself with people like Jonas Salk and Bucky. Well, I don't call him Bucky. Maybe you did. Buckminster Fuller and Abraham Maslow. And you said you just called Abraham Maslow up on the phone one day?
And invited him to lunch. And he came. And I told him about my passion for finding out life purpose and what works. And feeling that we were moving towards something, but I wasn't sure what it was. So he was very affirmative to me, and he gave me a list of what he called the Eupsychian network. Before the human potential movement, it was Eupsyche, good souls. Mm-hmm. And I then wrote to all of them and did the first, I believe, evolutionary networking effort, and asked them what they felt was the next step for the future good. And for the future good, I got all these responses, and then I published a little newsletter called The Center Letter on people's response to what's emerging. Uh-huh. And I would say the way I met, then I got to be well-known myself. Mm-hmm. And then Jonas Salk called me up. And he
picked up the phone one day and, hey, it's Jonas.
That's what he did. And he said, we are two peas in the same genetic pod. I would like to take you to lunch because you stated my vision better than I could. Wow. So he came and took me to lunch. And I'll tell you what happened, Alan. It's the first evolutionary human being that I truly met.
What do you mean by evolutionary human being?
There's a quality in an evolutionary human being of a deep impulse. toward a future greater than we have known before. There's an impulse of patterning, of recognizing what's breaking through and being part of it. There's a passionate desire to give your purpose for that higher good. And there's, I might say, almost like seeing evolution as a process of fulfillment of life purpose, rather than a mechanistic thing or totally outside of one's domain. It became the awareness that we are evolution becoming conscious of itself, and therefore evolution by choice. I guess I fell in love with it. It's like falling in love with God, you know?
It's fascinating that you put out, you followed your inner muse, and you put out this information via a newsletter. It circulated, went viral, as we'd say now, given the cyber world. And by law of attraction, you brought to yourself these well-known futurists. You are now, of course, in that same mold as a futurist. But the people you attracted to yourself, like Jonas Salk, Buckminster Fuller, Abraham Maslow, amazing how that happened.
It's amazing. And I'll tell you a really interesting story about Bucky that he never did mention to others. I was inspired at one point. I asked another question of the universe. What kind of human could handle all the new powers that is good? And by the new powers, I mean the radical technologies, the Ray Kurzweil scenario. We're uploading our brains. We're building new bodies. We're going beyond the biological life form. So I, in asking that question, had a direct experience, I would say, of the Christ. And in that experience, I was guided to go to the New Testament. And I come from a Jewish agnostic, secular, materialistic background. Uh-huh.
Very familiar with that.
Yeah, I went to the New Testament and I came up on St. Paul. Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep. We shall all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, and so on. And I just went verse after verse and thought, oh my God, it's coded evolution. And that we would not be able to uncode the Bible until we ourselves were capable of the miracles that the Bible said Jesus did. Whatever the truth is, they wrote that down and we began to do it. And so I wrote an evolutionary interpretation of the New Testament. And I gave it to Buckminster Fuller. By some grace of thought, I thought he might be interested. And he took me aside one day at the Anaheim Center in Los Angeles, and he said, I have to talk to you alone. He had the manuscript under his arm. He put his arms around me, and he called me darling. He called everybody darling. He said, I had the same experience that you did. I was walking down the streets of Chicago. I felt a presence, a light. And it said, Bucky, you are to be a first mini Christ on earth. What you attest to is true. And he said he went to the New Testament and he began to write somewhat similar to what I had written, an evolutionary decoding of the message that we shall all be changed. We can do the work that Jesus did. The sufferings of the present cannot be compared to the glory, etc. And he then wrote that I was the best informed human now alive on the subject of the future. And the reason he wrote that, which the World Future Society would not have agreed with, is that we had a Christ experience.
That's the term Christ experience. Could you expand on what that means?
Well, I asked I have a tendency to ask the universe questions and get experiential realities in return. So when I asked what kind of person can handle this power, I happened to be walking around Mount Calvary Monastery in Santa Barbara. There was a big cross there, and there was a group of butterfly-colored wings of people jumping off higher mountains as in their own hang gliders. And it was an image of mass metamorphosis floating above the cross. And it was that image that triggered in me an inner experience of an inner voice, not a visualization. But why did Jesus go to Jerusalem and get crucified when he could have avoided it? Why? Well, I just got, He did it in order to demonstrate the next stage of evolution, which was the resurrection. Very different from Buddha, very different from the Hindus. He was demonstrating the new body, the new person, the new way, and said we would do the works. And when I saw the hang gliders, I got an inner message from, I would say, this Christ inner experience, was if you love God above all else, your neighbor as yourself, yourself as a natural Christ, combined with science and technology, you will all be changed. And really, Alan, I got a sense that the whole thing is true. If we were to combine all the radical technologies with a loving consciousness, it doesn't have to be, it's not the Christ, it's not Christian religion. Mm-hmm. It's what that Christ consciousness expresses, a person of complete and total love with the power to transform the material world. That's what it is.
Well, now we've got the tech. I mean, the technology continues to evolve faster than we can even consume it. The question is now, how do you combine that with loving consciousness? And indeed, are we doing that?
Well, I have a contribution to make toward it, because there is to be published a book of my Bible writings. It's coming out through Muse Harbor Press. It'll be out in the late spring, and it's called Evolutionary Testament of Co-Creation, The Promise Will Be Kept. And it starts with the Gospels, Acts, and Epistles from an evolutionary perspective. It's not theology, it's inspiration. And I'm going to do evolutionary Bible study groups.
Uh-huh. How's that for a secular agnostic Jewish person? How does a secular agnostic Jewish person wind up doing all this?
Well, you know why? First of all, Jesus was Jewish.
It's true. I remind some of my evangelical Christian friends who want to convert me that their Savior is Jewish.
I have a dear friend, Mark Gaffney, who is very Jewish. He's written two books called The Radical Kabbalah. And through him, as we were talking about work we're doing together about the new human and the evolution of love, I realized in talking with him that I'm very Jewish. But I have never been of the Jewish religion, just as I've really never been of the Christian religion, because the evolutionary impulse transcends both of them, but fulfills both of them. So I am in a new category with many other people now, which I'm calling evolutionary spirituality or conscious evolution.
Yeah, I want to get to that because
are you there?
Your new book, Conscious Evolution, is a revised edition. But what does that mean? What is the phrase? Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. You hear me? Okay. Okay, good. We okay now?
I'm fine. I think you might have blanked out for a few minutes.
Yeah, I'm hearing you fine. We're hearing you fine.
I hear you.
Okay, then I think we're good. And we'll edit out all this extraneous stuff.
Okay.
Conscious Evolution, which is the name of your revised edition, what does that phrase mean?
It's very simple. It means evolution has become self-aware in us. It means that we have the power to, by every act we do, the babies we have, the food we eat, the wars we fight, the cars we drive, are affecting evolution by everything. And so therefore, I call it evolution by choice, not chance. We're the first species on Earth of the billions that are extinct before us, the first to be aware of the process of evolution and that it could render us obsolete, or we could evolve ourselves by choice. So in order to do that, you have to be conscious of the process of evolution that came before us for the billions and billions of years, which I began a study of through this inspiration. So I studied cosmology, geology, biology. I studied chaos theory. I studied dissipative structures. Uh-huh. I studied, you know, all Irvin Laszlo and Ilya Prigogine and all the people, the global brain, the Teilhard de Chardin, the great Catholic theologians like John Hout and Beatrice Bruteau. And I began to piece together the inner story of evolution as well as the outer story of cosmogenesis as the most meaningful evolution of love, if you want to be really radical about it. what's it leading? The only salvation of the human race is to expand our love and our creativity joined. And I think that's the direction of evolution. And if I want to be taking God's perspective for the moment, I would say that's the plan.
You, in your book, Neil Donald Walsh writes an introduction where he says, to what are we going to give birth? Will we be successful in getting the hell out of our lives? Or will we bring more of it in until we finally destroy our planet altogether with one final foolishness? And Stephen Hawking just this month said he doesn't think we'll last another 1,000 years. That's pretty gloomy futurism there, isn't it?
Well, I think you learn from evolution that crisis precedes transformation, and problems are evolutionary drivers, and nature takes jumps through forming more complex whole systems. There's a pattern. So what I've been motivated by, Alan, in my own small way, as any one person would be very small, but I got the pattern of what we need to do. And what we really need to do right now is connect what's already emergent.
How do we do that?
We need the proper internet communication system and the proper call for that. I'm part of some organizations that are attempting this. One is called the Center for Integral Wisdom. It was founded by Mark Gaffney and has, let's say, John Mackey, John Gray, Michael Beckwith, myself, source code changers who have this as a shared purpose. So I am doing my best to rally the troops to do this.
And how will that play out? How are we going to, I mean, this seems like a very long-term project. And how do you raise the consciousness of the rest of us who need to jump on board at a time of wars and pestilence and poverty, and so much is taking place in the world now that it seems like quite a mountain to climb to accomplish this.
Well, you see, what's not being done, because it's not considered the news, is everything that's already emerging. The emerging world is in our midst, but the news is of the dying world. Now, that is like a defect of the nervous system of the body politic. And what is amazing, Alan, is that the planet has grown a new nervous system in the last 10 years. It's grown Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter and Google and the over 7 billion cell phones. It appears to me that the noosphere or thinking layer or global brain can be connected quickly, because it is already connecting. And so this is an evolutionary question for you and us and all of us who would agree with this, is how do we infuse that global brain quickly enough with the impulse of love and creativity? Teilhard de Chardin's language as a Jesuit priest was, it will lead to the Christification of the earth. Now, when I read that way back in the early 60s, I realized my purpose in life was to bring the noosphere into a communication system of creativity, innovation, and love. And so I'm doing my best to create enough resources and team to call for that and make it into a global communion of pioneering souls. There's a sacredness in it. I would like to create a new sacred space on internet where people's deeper intuition, the impulse of evolution, comes through us, because I trust the organizing capabilities of the universe itself. Just think, you know, you and I are 50 trillion cells. We're not organizing one single one of those cells.
Yeah, it's doing the work for us.
So there is something that's doing the work for us if we do the work for ourselves. It's a greater force, in other words.
In Conscious Evolution, you talk about how, and by the way, we're talking with Barbara Marx Hubbard, whose new revised edition of Conscious Evolution is out. You talk about your run for the vice presidency in 1984. Did you think back then the way to make these changes was through the political process, and do you now think that this has to supersede the political process?
I do. I do. I have a great love of American democracy and America in general for its purpose of liberating people's creativity. And I can see that liberal democracy is so stuck in competition, opposition, and corporate control that it is no longer feasible for it to do it. And actually, wherever it's being tried in the world, liberal democracy is no longer able to handle the situations. So I think I call it synergistic democracy, which is what I'm advocating, which is not a new form of trying to change the existing political system. It's creating a trans-political activity of all the people everywhere who would like to participate, which will then become so effective that it will do what the existing political system is paralyzed to do. And then what will happen to the political system, I don't know. But I do know we're the ones who are free to do the change.
The person who wrote a blurb on the front of your book, Marianne Williamson, whose great book, Return to Love, has much of the same messaging that you've talked about in terms of love. And she ran for, or attempted to run for Congress, challenging Henry Waxman in California just a couple of years ago. I don't know if we'll ever be able to get people like you and like Marianne, however, into elected office, and which, as you point out, may not be the way to affect these changes. But wouldn't it be great if we had people, or Dennis Kucinich, who, as you know, wanted a Department of Peace rather than a Department of War.
Right.
But these people seem unelectable, don't they?
Well, you see, I think they are because the existing system is structured wrong for them. I think they're powerful and great. And even if they got in, I've talked to Marianne about this, you know, there's one little woman in the midst of that structure.
Yeah.
She could cause a lot of trouble, but whether she could do anything else, I don't really know. And so I'm 85, Alan, and I am so incredibly turned on with not wanting to die until I see this.
Well, you don't sound like you're going anywhere anytime soon.
No, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going this way. This is the way I'm going. I hope you'll help.
How can the average person help? Those who read your book, those who hear this, those who are familiar, what can the average person do to move this forward?
Well, the simplest thing that every single person can do is to tune into their own desire to create, their own particular life purpose, what they want to give that they haven't yet been able to give, and to take some steps toward it by finding others that agree with them and begin to create places of shared life purpose and connect. And go to my website, barbaramarkshubbard.com, buy the book Conscious Evolution, because we are going to do our part of connecting people who feel this way. I'm teaching on the Shift Network, thousands and thousands of students out there. And many of us, I mean, the whole Shift Network is geared in this direction, and they have almost 1 million students. This is a lot of people on just one network. We are far more of individuals scattered around the world than we yet know. So I pose the question to everyone. If we have only a few years to make a shift, and we've been given a new nervous system, and we're free, anyone who's free anywhere, this is the hugest political question of our time.
You have been a very big part of the human potential movement, and now you talk about the social potential movement. What is the shift between the human potential movement and the social potential movement?
Well, they grow out of each other. I think without the human potential movement, you would not be getting the social potential movement. But there are hundreds of thousands, millions of people who have done all kinds of personal growth all around the world in the human potential movement and still are coming online all the time, particularly with all these internet courses online. And they are not wanting to help build a dying system. So they become innovators and creators themselves. Like, I'm part of the Evolutionary Leaders Group, and there are 50 people who must have hundreds of thousands, millions of people they're networking with collectively, all of whom are working in this direction, but not yet coordinated. And I'm, in fact, just preparing process for the evolutionary leaders to connect the dots of these 50 people. That's just 50 people. If they were connected, it would be strong. So we seem to be working against a fundamental human problem of separation of ourselves in silos, separation from our own egoic selves, you know. So overcoming the illusion of separation in theological terms is the key.
You talk in the book about Birth 2012 and how on December 22nd, 14 years after your book was first published, you produced a live planetary birth experience called Birth 2012. Was 2012 a seminal year, a shift year for the universe?
I believe it was, in the sense that so many people thought it was. And also, I think it was, you know, it was the end of the Mayan calendar, which had a lot of apocalyptic communications going on. That's not the real meaning of the Mayan calendar, that the world was coming to an end, but something is coming to an end. That is really true. A state of consciousness is coming to an end, a certain state of behavior. We can't overpopulate, pollute, and continue and survive. Okay, that's coming to an end, or we are. So the second thing we did with Stephen Dynan and the whole Shift Network is celebrate whatever is emerging as a new era of evolution. And the thing is, Alan, we're very young as a global species. We're very, very young as a global community. We don't have any of the institutions to do this, except our communication system and a few others. But I mean, our existing structures like politics, government, religion, universities, they're not structured this way. They're structured just the opposite. So we have a structural problem and we have a mimetic problem. The mimetic problem is we don't have an image in genetic, in ideas, collectively, of the potential of our future. And that's been my particular personal passion, is to help people see what's emerging.
People can go to BarbaraMarksHubbard.com. Is that the space you were referring to in terms of the safe space on the internet, the place, the space to watch this conscious evolution? Or is there another space you're looking to do?
No, there's another one that has to be built. It's not there yet. But BarbaraMarksHubbard.com is a space where you can find out through the new news what's happening.
I appreciate talking to you. The book, Conscious Evolution, the revised edition, just out. Barbara Marks Hubbard, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Alan. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks.
Bye.